Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. I'm Dr. J, and I'll be your guide to a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. Speaking with Elaine Walker, she's the lead singer and founder of the band Zia. Welcome, Elaine.
Welcome. Hello.
So you have done a very unusual set of things as for a musician, and one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about first was the fact that you are dissatisfied with the state of contemporary music, but not in the traditional sense. You're not like a critic of rock or a critic of classical music. You don't like the whole tonal scale altogether. And as a consequence of the schooling that you did at Berklee School of Music, I guess, you developed an interest in microtonal music. Can you give us a little bit about what the difference between microtonal and 12-tone music is?
Well, 12-tone music is what normally anyone from the Western Hemisphere would associate with music and not even think about it or question it. If you look at a piano, the keys are set up with 12 notes per octave. So you play up the scale and 12 half steps later you get to the next octave. So in a guitar, it has to do with how far the frets are apart, and they're arranged in a 12-tone equal temper tuning as well. Same thing with wind instruments, the way the holes and valves are set up will play 12 notes per octave. So I have nothing against the 12-tone scale. In fact, I think it makes a lot of sense harmonically. It's basically structured off of natural harmonics for the most part in a little bit of an arbitrary manner was set up, but it really is based off of natural harmonics. And it's just that music is art. It's not, you can't just settle on measurements that someone has somewhat arbitrarily come up with and then just think that is a whole world of music. You know, India uses different tunings, 19 notes per octave, and other countries use different tunings. Mm-hmm. So just the fact that it's music and it's an art means that you really, someone at some point needs to shatter down every single wall and start over and, you know, not just accept any type of system that's in place because it's art. That's what art is.
What other composers or musicians have experimented with microtonality?
Well, there are all kinds of avant-garde artists. You know, Harry Partch, and I'm sure John Cage, I mean, he doesn't really use much tonality. And then there's all kinds of Indian music and Chinese music. And
well, now, you bring up John Cage, anti-tonality, you know, a silent piece or, you know, dropping shoes in a piano.
Yeah, that's kind of another topic.
It's a whole different kettle of fish. You're actually creating harmonies between the traditional harmonies that we have now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, and you've created your own instruments to do that.
Well, one of the reasons I created my own instruments was to just simply have instruments that did not visually represent any tuning, well, especially the 12-tone tuning. So what I did was, the idea I had for Zia in the beginning, which I'm not quite so snobby about anymore, but in the beginning I wanted us to play only microtonal music, you know, it could be any tuning, and not use any traditional instruments that visually represented a 12-tone tuning. So just completely get rid of that altogether, but still write pop music. Well, in the beginning it was more hardcore industrial weirdness, but there's still tonality to it and song structure. So we basically have been just playing MIDI triggers with sticks, just banging on different, like a whole wall of circuit boards and different shapes and sizes of MIDI triggers. It's not till recently I learned enough electronics to actually build something real, you know, besides just MIDI triggers.
You've made a MIDI drum that you play like a guitar, is that it?
Yeah, it was called a Zia drum for a long time, and lately I've been calling it the Planetar. It's something I wear around my neck, and it's basically a 2x4 piece of wood that's molded into this futuristic-looking shape and painted it nice and silver sparkly. And then it has 9 buttons for my fingers, because my thumb's behind it, so I really have 9 fingers left at that point. So it's got these buttons that are naturally where my fingers fall, and I just hit them with my fingers.
Cool.
And they're also just MIDI triggers. But I realized it worked out perfectly because I use what's called a drum cat. I use the brains of the drum cat, and it has 9 trigger inputs. So you can, any 9 drums that you make on your own, you can plug them into these trigger inputs and program it so that you can play any synthesizer or sampled note. So it has 9 trigger inputs, and I have 9 buttons that I hit, and I realize there's 9 planets. I put pictures of planets on the buttons, and Jupiter happened to fall on the thumb, and it just worked out perfectly.
Well, the 9 planets, we'll get to your space enthusiasm in a second, because 9 planets would be a natural thing for you to click into there. I want to mention, though, that you met most of your colleagues, your current two bandmates in Zia, what their names are?
Liz Leisinger. And a very recently mutually departed Haeyoung Kim.
Oh, really? It's just the two of you now, Liz?
Yeah, I hate to even bring it up now because it's so fresh, but it was mutual and friendly decision.
Mm-hmm. Well, the three of you had met at Berklee.
Mm-hmm.
At Berklee School of Music, and that's in New York City?
That's in Boston.
That's in Boston. And you were all students of electronic music there?
Yeah, all three of us have a degree in electronic music, and Liz also has a degree from there in film scoring, and Haeyoung also had a degree in engineering, like music studio engineering.
Well, so what are you going to do now? Are you going to find another third wheel?
I don't know if I'll be able to find someone that's just as educated as Haeyoung was. Plus, we're all classically trained pianists, and we all sing a little.
Right. Oh, well, that's too bad. We'll wait for the reuniting of that particular trio, but I'm sure you'll do something.
Yeah, between the three of us, we have five, almost 6 degrees, so that was kind of a coincidence.
You're working on another degree right now at NYU?
Yeah, I'm going to get my master's this spring in music technology.
Uh-huh. And your master's thesis is the application of chaos theory to music.
Yeah, something like that. Uh-huh. I haven't settled on a name, but yeah.
How's that going to work? Is that going to be like a white noise generator or something?
No, it's tonal music, very organic sounding, a little bit avant-garde and academic sounding, because basically what it is very, in a very simple way, I can explain it. If you have a very small, simple function like 1 minus rx squared, and you solve this equation, whatever the answer is, you plug back into x, and then you solve it again, and then you plug it back in. It's like a very simple musical feedback loop, and it will spit out a stream of numbers that happen to be very interesting, organic sounding, natural sounding, numbers you assign to MIDI notes and scale it somehow and listen to it, and it sounds really neat. A lot of it sounds like something a human would have just created on their own.
And is anybody else experimenting with this? Is this something?
Yeah, in fact, there's been people experimenting with this, as far as I know, since the early 90s and maybe even before that, but it's very sparse, and I haven't found anyone really get so deep into it. It's just been, like, fun playing around here and there and playing with different equations.
Hmm. Now, you have a second passion that you've integrated into your current passion with music, which is space activism. How did that develop?
Oh, just common sense. I really don't know. I think it...
You didn't have an moment as a kid?
I can kind of guess how I got there. It just seemed like it happened all of a sudden. When I graduated from Berklee in 91, mm-hmm. and I was just totally immersed in school, and then once I got out of school, I kind of finally opened my eyes and got out a little bit. And that's pretty much when the internet kind of started, or at least when I discovered it, 91 or 92. And the first thing I figured out how to do was subscribe to all these news groups. Remember that overwhelming list of news groups?
It's still out there, unfortunately.
I subscribed to all kinds of different things, but it was stuff like futurism and technology stuff and cryogenics and all kinds of different space lists. And then I sat back and looked at this list of news groups that I'd subscribed to and thought, man, what am I nuts? What's all this stuff? It was just all this stuff I happened to be interested in. And I realized after a while it all really had to do with getting into space, you know, cryogenics, freezing your body, and technology, and
had to get in. That has to do with getting into space in the sense of going to other stars and generation ships and things like that.
Well, what I tend to think about mostly on a daily basis is the fact that it really seems like people need to eventually migrate into space. I mean, it's just common sense, really. Mm-hmm. It's also more than common sense. It's just our instincts as humans has always been. We've always been creatures of exploration.
It's our obvious destiny.
Yeah, I mean, I know I have that drive. Yeah. I don't necessarily need to get off the planet myself. This is a nice planet.
But plus, it's an insurance policy. There's all kinds of things that could wipe out life on this planet. And if we don't get to other planets, we won't be able to...
Yeah, that's certainly one profound reason.
Yeah.
I try not to focus too much on the all eggs in one basket scenario anymore, because it seems so kind of just negative. And there's enough reasons to go anyway. You don't just say, I need to get out of my parents' house in case it blows up.
Good point. And the likelihood of the two are probably about the same. Now, I'm speaking with Elaine Walker. She's the founder of Zia, and she's also the Northeast coordinator and organizer for the National Space Society. Tell us about the National Space Society. It's the principal lobby for space in the United States, isn't it?
Yeah, they do a lot of lobbying in D.C. The headquarters are based in D.C., and they have a nice office there. I finally got to see it. There are about 30,000 members worldwide, mostly in the United States, but also in other countries. And there are about 25 or 30 volunteer groups, chapters, and based in more of the larger cities. And I got involved in the Boston chapter some years ago. I was actually subscribed to their magazine for a couple of years before I even realized they had any kind of a local group. And when I found out, I just started showing up to the meetings. And it was basically a lecture series. They always had someone there talking about space travel. And then the fourth meeting I was there, they elected me president of the chapter. And anyway, the whole focus is on humans getting into space. So There's also the Planetary Society. Their focus is more on robotics and science and exploration. But the National Space Society definitely focuses on how to get people eventually living and working and thriving and playing in space, just like it's every day.
Now, you combine your interests in space activism, traditional space activism, which tends to be a pretty male, linear, rationalistic. I'm sure you could tell me stories. With an interest in some of the more non-traditional aspects of interest in space, the theories of Zachariah Sitchin, right?
I would never bring him up at one of my space meetings.
Because
or anything to do with aliens or anything like that.
Okay, Zachariah Sitchin, he fits into the kind of ancient astronauts theory, right?
Yeah.
That we were visited in the past. His books have explored that theme.
Yeah. First of all, I would highly recommend that everyone and anyone read the book by Zachariah Sitchin called The 12th Planet.
Uh huh.
And I started reading a lot of his other books too. I have all of them. But that book really sums it up, and it's fairly clearly written. And
Nibiru is the
footnote. Nibiru.
Nibiru. And you have several songs and one whole album dedicated to the ideas of Sitchin's books.
Shem is our EP. That there are two or three songs about his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the whole thing. But yeah, Shem, that word itself, is a word you can find in the Bible. And he thinks it was translated basically to mean name. So, you know, the people wanted to make a name for themselves, so they built the Tower of Babel. They wanted to build a Shem for themselves, in other words. He thinks the word Shem means ancient fire rocket, or it just means fire rocket.
Uh-huh.
So they wanted to be like the gods, so they tried to build a fire rocket. Of course, they made it out of mud or whatever. They didn't know how to do it, but they built the Tower of Babel. So he thinks Shem means fire rocket. That's the name of our EP that was released in 96.
Now, your most recent EP, your most recent album, CD, is Big Bang, which I have here. And you have the first song, the title track, the first song on it, The Golden, is based on his ideas. Can you just tell us a little bit about how Golden came, what Golden is?
Okay. He thinks that there is another planet in our solar system that's very, very far away, and we simply can't see it because it's not lit up. I mean, the sun very dimly shines on it, if at all. And it takes about 3,600 years to orbit the Earth. And when it does, I mean orbit the sun, and when it does finally come into our solar system, it basically crashes through all the planets and crashes through everything, and whatever it hits, it hits. So every 3,600 years, he thinks that these people on this planet, whom he calls the Anunnaki, you can also find referenced in the Bible, the Anunnaki, they come down to Earth, and their original plan was to come here and get gold for their atmosphere. Because gold, I guess, is the most highly conductive metal. And they needed gold dust or something for their atmosphere somehow. I don't know how that all ties in, really. So they eventually decided they needed slave labor to help them get gold. So they upgraded ape woman with their alien DNA. And it's the whole Adam and Eve story, I guess, with the rib and what in the clay and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually a lot of evidence now or, you know, research that shows that clay would come in handy for some of this DNA interaction, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how Golden comes in, that they were originally mining for gold and decided, oh, we'll just get some help. And they made, well, we need them to be a little smarter than apes, so we'll just give them some of our DNA.
Well, let's take a listen to a track from Golden.
Okay.
Station of Jupiter. She goes down to the west. Planet grows in brilliance, and in the zodiac, Cancer will become Nibiru. security.
Now, I'm speaking with Elaine Walker. She's the lead singer from Zia, an all-girl band, now just two of you, in New York City. I say all-girl. I'm a staunch feminist. I understand that you don't mind the girl phraseology.
Ew.
You don't like it?
I don't know. We're kind of scared of women, so it's hard to call ourselves feminists so much.
Well, I've seen
My whole take on that is that just do cool, smart stuff, and then men will respect you. I don't know. I don't really think... In my life, I've never had a problem with men not respecting me. And I think part of it is that I've been spoiled. Like, at Berkeley, we were part of the whole... I mean, I spent since 1986 at that place, so that was my whole world for so long. And we hung with the electronic musicians. And there tends to not really be any sexism there. We all just hung out together. And then, you know, I grew up around my brother's friends and just always had men all over the place. It never seemed to be a problem.
So you're kind of post-feminist. Well, I can say if folks...
what's that called? I don't know.
If folks go to your website at www.chaoscontroller.com/Zia...
You know an easier way to remember it?
How's that?
Just www.ziaspace.com. That'll get you there.
Zia space?
Yeah, Zia and then space, like outer space.
Ziaspace.com. You have pictures of some of your performances, and you do have some pretty outlandish Barbarella-type costumes. Maybe not as outlandish as Barbarella, but it seems like you're really into the space shtick with the costuming and the...
Sexy space,
right?
We're totally not sexy in real life, but on stage we tend to be, I guess.
Okay. I also wanted to play... a song which I guess you've withdrawn because of you need to re-engineer it a little bit, but the song Space Zine.
Oh, legal issues, yeah. You can't just use Led Zeppelin drums.
Okay. So I'll only play a clip of it here, but the lyric that caught my attention is, "Just because I dream, I can't assume that everyone else does."
The lunar sphere.
So maybe you're not alienated because of feeling oppressed as a woman, but you do feel a little alienation around your idealism and your space activism vis-a-vis the normals?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm glad I have interviews now and then, because at least someone will ask me stuff about space. Because in real life, my God, no one thinks about that. Who has time to think about space exploration or the great vast cosmos and the, you know, who has time to think about such profound things?
Well, I just got back from a counter-inauguration protest, and I can assure you that I've been thinking a lot about the desire to escape into space, but that's a whole another topic.
Escapism. Yeah, I feel like I'm cursed because on a daily basis I think about it, worry about it, and I won't be able to, well, I'll never be able to die peacefully, but I certainly won't be able to die peacefully if I don't know that we're migrating into space, and people don't care about it, and I don't know why I'm so cursed with this. What happened? I don't know.
Uh-huh. Now, how's the progress going? You're organizing a big space march in 2002?
Yeah. Don't make me choke.
It's not going well, that organizing?
I must be crazy. Well, in March 2002, we need thousands upon thousands of people to go to the Washington Monument. Just show up there.
Uh-huh.
Figure out the date. And just show up.
You mean that
bring
big,
your friends, your dogs, and it's basically a...
That big rocket phallus looking
hooray
thing.
For space march. It's like the Million Martian March or something like that.
Excellent. I can see a lot of good costuming with that.
Yeah, I don't even care if it gets cheesy. I don't care if there's alien propaganda, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Just people need to go. Anyone that cares about getting into space at any point, or that any... if they think any generation of humans should eventually go into space, or if they just like space, you know, go there, because if 100 people show up, it's going to be detrimental. There's got to be a lot of people there.
It seems like there is a growing subculture of techie-oriented young folks. And, of course, I've been reading the same email list that you have, so we probably both have a skewed perception of this. But the Extropians in particular, you know, that seems to be a subculture of libertarian-type young people who are interested in space. And you consider yourself an Extropian still?
Yeah, why not? I finally met an Extropian in real life, actually two of them. And they're very different from me, but we do get along great.
I've read that you were unhappy that the principles that Max Moore wrote have been evolving. You like the original versions?
Well, 2.5 is what it was when I
joined.
Discovered them.
Yeah.
And so I was going around chanting this, you know, dynamic optimism, self-transformation, blah, blah, blah. Spontaneous order, that was my favorite. And then I remember pretty soon after I joined, I got completely overwhelmed with the amount of... you know, on their mailing list is just very heavy reading. I mean, just 20, 30 messages a day. So I unsubscribed to the mailing list at some point, and, you know, I still incorporated Extropianism into our Zia propaganda. We had multimedia discs, like floppy disks with HyperCard stacks in the early 90s. And, you know, there's a whole thing about Extropianism on there and all the principles, and I've been chanting this to the whole world ever since. I just didn't know these people, and I wasn't on their mailing list because I just couldn't handle the amount of mail. And,
right.
And I always, you know, looked up to Max Moore,
mm-hmm,
as some kind of, you know, just someone who really inspired me.
It's kind of unusual for a young woman involved in artsy music and avant-garde music to have conservative or relatively conservative politics. Are you have written at least one thing I read that you thought you were a Republican. Are you a George Bush kind of Republican? Is this a happy week for you?
Wait, where'd you read this?
Well, I read.
Are you talking about song lyrics?
No, that there's an interview where folks were asking you about your politics, and you said that you were probably a libertarian, but more sympathetic with the Republicans.
Okay, that's not because of social issues. Believe
me,
I'm scared of their social values.
Oh, okay.
But that's more like the economic, basically shrinking government and just not making laws and just trusting people.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, I mean, the Republican values, they think you should just simply tell your kids to be good people, raise your kids that way. There shouldn't be all these laws telling you how to be and what to do.
Yeah.
You know, that whole thing, that morals start in the family. And I have mixed feelings about family structures as well.
Yeah.
Whatever family structure you want to have, whatever that happens to be, whatever type of leadership and inspiration the kids have, whether it be a mom and a dad, or whether it be two dads, or whether it be like, I have stepkids. They've never just known a mom and dad.
Okay.
Daddy and Elaine and this, I'm getting divorced anyway. And then, you know, their mom and their mom's new husband. They have five sets of grandparents. You know, fine. That's fine. And it seems to be a healthy way for them to grow up.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever it is, we as parents just simply have to tell the kids what, you know, what we feel is right and wrong and just instill good values in them.
Yeah.
Just make them feel comfortable and loved, basically. They'll figure out values on their own for the most part if you just make them feel loved. There doesn't need to, don't need to be all these crazy laws all over the place.
Well, let's hope that John Ashcroft doesn't do too much to screw that up in the next couple of years. I have a fear that his version of family values is a lot more intrusive than than we would like. Well, it's been...
Yeah, that's the thing. That's why I feel like I'm in the Twilight Zone sometimes. I cannot straighten this out. Why do Republicans have such scary social values? But my dad's kind of a Republican, at least. I think he's actually a registered Democrat, but he's always voted Republican. His morals are not screwed up at all. He's very, you know, open-minded and very conservative, but still open-minded. Just basically basic common sense, good morals. But why Republicans make a lot of sense to me as far as how things start in the family and people should be responsible for themselves and for their kids, but yet their social values are kind of skewed. And then Democrats, or liberals, I should say, think there needs to be all this control somehow, like just make a law for it, that'll fix it.
Except that they want women to be able to control their own bodies and they don't want laws against homosexuality.
Yeah, but their social values are obviously much more realistic.
Right.
Why, I guess that's what libertarians are, is some kind of happy middle ground, like the best of both worlds and leave out the worst. Is that...
Well, that's a whole other discussion. I think we'll get back on and talk about that again later. But yeah, I think that is, I think that
I'm
is.
I'm sorry, that's just something I'm frustrated about. I can't figure it out.
I think
No one can explain it to me.
I'll send you a pamphlet. It's been a great pleasure talking to you, and I wish you great success. You just took an exam. Are you almost done with your master's now?
One more semester.
Okay. Okay. Good. Well, nice to talk to you.
Thanks. You too.
Okay.
Take care. Bye-bye. Bye. We love you. Bye.
Bye. You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS FM at the University of Connecticut in Storrs. If you want to learn more about democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts about this show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes, that's J-H-U-G-H-E-S, at changesurfer.com. You can also check out past and future shows, archived in streaming MP3, and myriad relevant links at the website www.changesurfer.com.